Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Again, if you watch or listen to the CNN YouTube debate tonight, you can comment on it live or afterwards on our website, WNYC.org, with our first ever WNYC debate scorecard. Who won the debate for you and why? Who made you think about an issue in a new way? That should get lots of points. What was the most memorable response? And you can grade CNN on how they handle the YouTube questions. So do that tonight in real time during the debate or post afterwards on our first ever WNYC debate scorecard at WNYC.org. The debate airs live at 7 on CNN, and we will have it at 9 o'clock tonight on AM 820 WNYC. And, of course, we'll play clips and talk about the whole thing, including your posts on the debate scorecard tomorrow morning right here. Now, on Friday, I mentioned that we would have a call-in today for listeners of all ages who have already read Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows, but we're not going to do that. After further discussion in the office, we decided there was no way to adequately protect some of you from having the plot spoiled, since even if we air warnings and disclaimers every few minutes, people tune in and out of a radio show constantly, and it wouldn't be fair to someone out there who would undoubtedly get caught by surprise. And spoiler phobia extended on Friday from my work to my home as well. I was all set to take my kids to one of those Barnes & Noble Harry Potter parties on Friday night when my older boy vetoed the idea because he was afraid of spoilers lurking in the crowd. He didn't think anyone would spoil it on purpose, just that some people who knew the ending would be discussing it, and he didn't want to risk it just for the fun of dressing up and experiencing a scene. So imagine my surprise when I woke up Saturday morning and saw the op-ed in the New York Times by film critic Nathan Lee defending reviews that give it all away. So instead of a call-in for people who have read the book, we will declare this show a no-spoiler zone, at least for today, and ask, when should a film critic or book critic give away the plot? And when should we have our call-in for people who have read Deathly Hallows? How long should we wait? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Now, on the how long question, last week someone wrote in objecting to my reference to the ending of The Sopranos. I made that reference on Friday, and that was how many weeks after the finale had aired? So how many days or weeks should go by before we have a call-in on Deathly Hallows? Should we wait until school is back in to protect all the children? You know, the playground will never be a spoiler-free zone. Or how about never? Maybe we should never discuss it, because there's always someone yet who may take the book out of the library. How long is long enough? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And what do you think of this? If you missed it, I will give away the ending of the Nathan Lee op-ed. It says, the critic who says too much isn't the problem. The problem is that we don't trust critics to say exactly what we need to know. And he writes, I'm that terrible thing, the film critic armed with spoilers who isn't afraid to use them. I wouldn't dare unmask the secrets in the movie A History of Violence out of respect for the artistry of David Cronenberg and the integrity of his booby-trap plot. But there isn't a single frame of the number 23 that I wouldn't mock in great, guiltless detail for the simple reason that I find it extremely silly. A spoiler requires something to spoil, and someone to take offense at the spoiling. And I'm confident that my readership does not include humorless scholars of the Joel Schumacher Irv. To spoil or not, I don't know if people say Schumacher and Irv in the same breath very much, but he did. To spoil or not spoil involves larger questions about the role of the critic, the needs of the reader, and the changes to both caused by the scale, speed, and outlaw spirit of web-based commentary. So he raises interesting questions there, and now you can talk back to this reviewer. Someone told me that the Times has had an unbelievable outpouring of hostility, with people threatening to cancel their subscriptions and all kinds of things, because even though he didn't give away the ending to anything in particular, he defended the process, so, or the practice. So what do you want from a book or a movie or theater review anyway? Is it not a kind of consumer reporting, as Nathan Lee derides Here, let me read you this. He says, let me find this part. Yeah, he says, our obsession with spoilers has a diminishing effect, reducing popular criticism to a kind of glorified consumer reporting and the audience to babies. People outraged by spoilers should avoid all reviews before going to the movies or reading the book they've wanted for so long, because the fact is all criticism spoils, no matter how scrupulous. So 212-433-WNYC. And while your calls are coming in, we'll talk briefly with Dana Stevens, a film critic for Slate.com. Hi, Dana.
Hi, Brian.
So did you read Nathan Lee's op-ed?
I did. I've been following. I'm not reading the Harry Potter book, but I'm following the whole debate about the spoilage with great interest, as not a book critic, but a movie critic.
Do you have a policy for yourself when you write your film reviews?
I do. I mean, I would say that I have a fairly strict anti-spoiler policy. I wish we had Nathan Lee on the show so we could you know, debate his.
And we did call him up this morning, but we haven't been able to reach him.
I mean, I do agree with a lot of things he says in his column, even though I probably spoil less than he does, and I think I would be just as respectful of the Schumacher oeuvre as I would of David Cronenberg in a review. I mean, as a reader, though, it's different. I have to say, I wouldn't care as much about something like Kakatani's advance review of Harry Potter, because I can exercise my own judgment as a reader whether to pick it up or not.
Well, Kakatani's advance review, and I won't even say this much because some people are upset at it, she certainly did not give away the ending of the book. She said that certain things, she just, I won't even say that. She commented on the scope of certain things, right? And the degree to which certain things take place during the book. And I guess even that upset people, because even though she didn't say what things they were, I mean, even though she didn't say specifically who it affected and things like that.
Well, this is a problem that Nathan Lee, I think, refers to in his editorial as well. As a critic, you have to get, in order to even introduce the plot of a story enough to speak about it, you have to give away something. And I know that I've been the victim of some hate mail from readers who accuse me of spoiling, you know, for far less than giving away the ending, for essentially setting up, you know, a murder or whatever that happens in the first 10 minutes of a thriller, something that you need to know to get the plot rolling
right.
At all. So the definition of a spoiler, obviously, can wildly vary from reader to reader, and you could never satisfy everyone.
As a film critic, have you ever gone back and read the reviews of Psycho when it first came out?
No, I've never read an early review of Psycho, but I was going to use that as an example of a classic spoiler film that I think it would be fine to spoil now because it's so old. Why? What did critics say?
No, I don't know. I was just curious because it is such a classic example. Right, you wouldn't want to give it away.
But I wonder.
But how do you review the movie?
About spoilers existed back in the early '60s when that movie came out. Maybe things were just routinely spoiled. I really don't know.
And the filmmakers in that the Hitchcock folks had asked people not to give away the ending in their reviews, and I think historically that was the first time that this discussion was public regarding
right.
a movie. So I don't know what the content of the reviews were. But what
it's
do you
sort of
think?
The predecessor of the studio embargo that's so common now among critics, where you're sort of vaguely muscled into not talking about a movie until its opening day.
Right. Now, what about this idea from Nathan Lee that our obsession with spoilers has a diminishing effect, reducing popular criticism to a kind of glorified consumer reporting? Do you think of yourself as a consumer reporter?
I know this is an eternal question about criticism, and it's one that came up last time I was on your show, actually, when I was talking with Owen Gleiberman from Entertainment Weekly.
Right.
I mean, obviously, you know, I would prefer to think of myself as more than a consumer reporter helping someone decide what refrigerator to buy. I guess the role of the critic kind of differs according to what publication you write for and how you view yourself as a critic, but of course I would like to see myself more as part of the cultural conversation about a movie and not just somebody who's rubber stamping a thumbs up or thumbs down on a movie before people see it.
Right, and so if you're trying to write about a film at a more profound level that includes observations about the genre or the oeuvre or the culture we live in or the meaning of life as it intersects with this work of art, can you do that without giving away meaningful elements of the story?
I guess, you know, in some ways, yeah, I think you can go pretty far. But there is always that moment, I'm sure anyone who writes reviews for a living knows it, where you try to decide, have I gone far enough in describing the plot that I can now leave off the sort of plot summary part of my review and get into the real nitty-gritty and talk about something juicier? Have I gone too far? Have I not gone far enough? I mean, a good example just last week that I wrote on is the new Danny Boyle movie Sunshine, which of course revolves around a huge spoilerable question of whether or not this mission to reignite the sun in the future is successful or not, right? So do they or don't they reignite the sun? I mean, that would be a pretty big giveaway. A way that we kind of handle that at Slate sometimes, the web can offer some innovative ways to get around this spoiler problem. And at Slate, we've been doing these podcasts that we call spoiler specials, where a couple of people or more who have seen the movie sit down and have an audio, no-holds-barred discussion where you can give away anything, talk about the plot, talk about who dies. And we link that to the review, you know, with the disclaimer that you only click on it if you don't mind the movie being spoiled.
So what's the first comment on our webpage as we're talking about the spoiler issue? This from someone named Christy says, please, please, please warn those of us who haven't finished it if we need to turn off the radio for a certain period of time. In other words, she's nervous that in this conversation of spoilers, we're going to give away the ending of Deathly Hallows.
She doesn't have to worry about me because I've never made it through a Harry Potter book yet. Do you know the ending yourself?
I have three people in my household who read it this weekend, cover to cover. I know the ending. I know what happens to a lot of the characters. This is a spoiler-free zone, so don't worry. However, Brian in Norwalk wants to talk about the... Oh, and by the way, for those of you who want to talk back to Nathan Lee, if you read that op-ed, you can post comments on our webpage at WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer's show, and have that conversation about the critic as ever being justified in playing spoiler for the sake of a profound conversation in the review. WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer's show. Brian in Norwalk has a strong opinion about this. Hi, Brian.
Hey, Brian, first-time caller, love the show.
Thank you.
Well, I would say that I believe that reviews should never reveal the plot. And basically, I think the writer should have the talent to speak in vague generalities as opposed to a plot synopsis, which anybody can do.
What do you read a review for?
The New York Times.
No, what do you read a review for?
Oh, in general, mostly movies.
And what do you want to get from it?
I want to get... generally, the person's opinion, and most of the time I know what their tendencies are. A.O. Scott from The Times, I respect a lot.
But so it's like, whose taste, but this is the Consumer Reporter question, right? Whose taste you agree with is what you're looking for. How about a deeper conversation of life and meaning and, you know, the film reviewer as cultural essayist? You don't care.
No, I think that's an interesting proposition, but... I, for the most part, just want to know if it's worth going to spend money on or if it's worth buying the book.
Brian, thank you. Jennifer in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi, Brian.
So?
I'm actually a children's book publicist, and so I spend a lot of time every week reading reviews. And I think that far too often people do the plot synopsis as just sort of a lazy way of getting out of a review. I mean, if a review is only going to be a paragraph long, why tell the whole story of the book within it? I understand wanting to put in salient plot points if it's a longer review or a deeper discussion, but, you know, if it's three sentences, I don't need to know who lives or dies.
The funniest one I read of Deathly Hallows was in the Daily News on Saturday. I don't even know who the reviewer was, but it was plot, 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 and, oh, by the way, I won't give away the ending. But she gave away about the first 600 pages. So, Trent in Manhattan, you say you're a film critic?
Yeah. And if I were reviewing Citizen Kane as a new movie or The Usual Suspects, I wouldn't give away the identity of Rosebud or Kaiser Soze. But I think after these things have been around for 20 years, even though there are people who haven't been born yet who will be watching them maybe at some point on a DVD, I think you can sit down and have a logical discussion on them. I do talk plot points in my reviews, this North American Film Review, insofar as I feel that they're really salient to the audience, such as what I mentioned to your screener. If you have a character, for instance, who's dying of cancer, and that's going to turn out, because, you know, somebody's going out for a good time that evening, their mother died last week of cancer, they're going to skip that movie.
That's interesting. I'm going to leave it there. But Dana Stevens, what about that? He gives away that somebody dies of cancer in a movie for the reason that he said.
Gee, I don't know. I guess I don't think the critic can be responsible for protecting every single person with every individual reason they might have for not wanting to see a movie. I would think if that character's dying of cancer was a suspenseful plot point in the movie, I wouldn't give it away.
Martin in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. We have about 20 seconds for you.
Yes, I just think that because literary criticism of any kind, cinema or whatever, is just too broad. It should not be... muzzled and stopped from providing information for the larger culture.
So this is pro-spoiler if it provides a deeper read.
Well, exactly, because the problem is there will never be, as I think your guest said, there will be a point in time when somebody will not have read something or seen some movie, so you can't possibly have that kind of criterion in the back of your mind when you're writing a review.
Thank you. So, Dana, in our last few seconds here, do you almost feel tempted ever to write a pre-release review and a review 6 months later where you can explore the issues in a different way?
Yeah, if the movie stood up to it, I mean, if it was an important enough movie, you might be able to do that. I mean, like I was saying, I mean, having these sort of tricks of being online allows you, for example, to publish two reviews at the same time,
right,
one of which you can click through to only if you want to see the spoilers. And that's something my predecessor at Slate, David Elstein, used to do very effectively, sort of have a second page that you could go to if you didn't mind hearing about, you know, how it all turned out at the end.
Dana Stevens, film critic at Slate.com, thanks for joining us and substituting for the call-in we were going to have on Deathly Hallows and Decide Better of It.
Decided, I think you made the right choice, Brian.
We would have been overwhelmed with unhappy listeners.
Oh, hate mail flooding in.
Thanks for joining us.